Welcome to the weekly podcast of Capital Outlook from Wyoming PBS. Capital Outlook is a weekly show broadcast whenever the Wyoming legislature is in session from Cheyenne. To learn more, visit us at wyomingpbs.org. It's the final week of our 14th season of Capital Outlook. I'm Craig Blumenschein from Wyoming PBS. Much has changed in the last week, and Governor Mark Gordon joins us and gives his views on how plunging oil prices and stock markets may impact the state's future. Senate President Drew Perkins and House Speaker Steve Harshman discuss the legacy of the 65th legislature. Revenue Chairman Senator Cale Case and Representative Dan Zwanenser discuss whether the work of the Revenue Committee may have more importance this summer. We'll meet Senator Affie Ellis in our Capital Outlook profile, and we'll hear the future plans of two veteran Wyoming lawmakers, that's Senator Hank Coe and Senator Eli Bebout. Capital Outlook starts now.
This program is supported in part by a grant from the BNSF Railway Foundation, dedicated to improving the general welfare and quality of life in communities throughout the BNSF Railway Service Area. Proud to support Wyoming PBS.
By a grant from AARP, serving the needs and providing real possibilities for the over 50 population in Wyoming. AARP Wyoming. Proud to support Wyoming PBS.
And by Wyoming Humanities, celebrating our heritage, strengthening our democracy, and growing Wyoming's creative and cultural economy for over 50 years. Visit thinkwy.org.
And as we begin the final week of our 14th season of Capital Outlook, it's our privilege to be joined by the governor of the state of Wyoming, Governor Mark Gordon. Welcome to Capital Outlook, Governor. And thank you so much for taking time on what's a busy time of year for you.
Well, thanks, and Craig, it's always good to see you. We started the session, and now we're back.
So. We sure are, and boy, I think a lot has changed between 6 weeks ago and now. And I want to get right to it, Governor, if I could. I think that many Wyomingites today might feel that the fiscal foundation of our state is different and maybe has changed in the last 6 weeks. And I want to know, in the light of oil dropping below $34 a barrel today, with the stock markets taking the hits that they've taken, all of that is very, very recent. What are you telling today your State Department heads relative to their fiscal concerns?
Well, we began the year really talking about this was a time to assess and think about the future, that the future was probably going to be different than what we were used to. The events of the last week, the stock market, both fueled by coronavirus and the fears for that, and then sort of laid on to that the Saudi and Russian feud over oil prices certainly has done no good to the stock market as well as affecting our prices here locally. So I think everybody's very sober about what the future holds. We believe, and I've worked a lot with the legislature, that we still have some headway and some room to be able to look carefully at our budgets and think about if there are adjustments that need to be made, we have the opportunity to make those. I'm not reacting immediately to this. We've all seen ups and downs in the stock market. I've spent a lot of time, catching up with former Governor Sullivan and former Governor Geringer, and even Governor Friedenthal, just to sort of talk about if there were mistakes when we had these downturns before, what were they? And how should one react to new circumstances?
What do they tell you?
Well, they all say, gosh, I'm glad I wasn't governor during your time. But they all say, be sensible about this, be thoughtful.
Do you feel your window, though? We talked 6 weeks ago about having time. Yeah. Do you think that window has maybe shrunk now?
Well, I do, Craig, but I also would say, just as I mentioned at the beginning, you know, we are in a much different place than we were in those days. We do have the LISRA We have changed some of our investment programs. There's a little bit more of a buffer there, and that doesn't mean that we can be blasé about kind of going forward like nothing has changed. Things have. And I think after we get through this legislative session, I intend to have my heads of departments and agencies together and say, you know, what are the things that we can do to gird ourselves for a potential long-term shock? But Craig, I guess I'd say, and I said this at the beginning and I say that now, you know, it is time that we start thinking about what are the programs we can do without.
Many legislators have said in the past week or so, had this happened 6 weeks ago, the budget that's ultimately going to land on your desk likely would have looked a lot different. More red ink in your veto pen, Governor?
Well, no, there's some red ink. We really crafted this budget not with the idea of let's just go crazy and try to spend everything we can. We rolled it back. There's still room in most of the budgets for us to weather some storms. The capital construction, that was a place that I started this session saying we need to cut back. We still need to cut that back. Those are easy cuts to make. I think how we reorganize government, how we reduce the footprint of government is going to be really the critical issue now.
Of course, the budget was made on revenue projections mm-hmm. that came from October and then refined in January that it may be quite different today, at least those are the reports that the Joint Appropriations Committee got this week. Can you tell states that you'll sign a balanced budget knowing what you know about our revenue situation that's really changed since the budget information that the budget's based on?
I think, Craig, it's probably early to tell if the projections were radically off. You know, we're talking about a week change in both the stock market and in oil prices. When we start seeing it look different at a month's time, that's when I think we'll start to look at it much more carefully. And part of the reason I have spoken with former governors is, if you had to call a special session, what does that look like? How do we message to the people of Wyoming that we've had to make some really drastic cuts? Governor Mead, who I'm hoping to talk to soon, actually had to do some of that. $250 million he had to cut out of the budget. A lot of that, I hesitate to call it fat, but a lot of the excess services that we had, those are gone. Yep. And so at this point, it really is going to affect people. It already did in this budget. Director Reiner, the Department of Transportation, said we're going to be $150 to $200 million short. And what are we going to do about that? And I said, Director Reiner, we need to prioritize the roads, the ones that are going to bring the most money back to the state, the ones that our commerce travels on, those get first attention. What I wanted to make sure of is that the people of the state understood what these cuts would mean to their lives. Because it's easy enough to say we need to get rid of waste, fraud, and abuse. It's easy enough to say somebody else's program needs to be cut. But if you look at almost any program, somehow that cascades down to a personal.
Sure. President Perkins told our viewers earlier in our Capitol Outlook season that his constituents would tell him when it's time to raise taxes. And they are telling him now. Are your constituents telling you the same?
I hear a lot of things. I have heard we can't raise taxes. That's certainly one of the largest hues and cries. I've heard how are we going to afford things going forward, the conversation we're having now. I haven't heard specifically that it's time to raise taxes, but I did call in this session just because I thought it was important that we start to recognize our economy's changing. That's the reason I put my weight behind the lodging and tourism tax. We did get it passed. It was a horrendous lift. I wish we didn't have to do it, but of all the taxes that we had. This was the one that seemed the lowest hanging fruit, one that had the direct relationship to bringing more sales and use tax in.
What's the legacy of this legislature, Governor?
Well, I'll kind of quote the good president, Drew Perkins, who said, we're all in this at a time when our economy is changing. The legacy of this is, I think, this legislature actually has addressed some really tough issues. You know, the lodging tax, nobody wanted to do that. I don't know how many times we've been to the well on lodging tax or any other tax. And they took a very modest step forward, but it was a step forward. I think our budget came and it was well thought through. You know, I think there were some questions between the House and the Senate about whether cuts or increases should be in place. But the matter of is that we all knew kind of what the future had in store. One outstanding issue that I think we've still got to contend with is education funding. Obviously, we're doing a recalibration this year, and I think there is a reluctance on the part of some to say, let's look at that basket of goods. Others are saying maybe it's time to review that basket of goods. There may be some motivation saying, if we look at the basket of goods, that's how we reduce our cost on education. I think that's unclear. But I do think it's time, all these years later, 30 years later, to say, what does it mean to educate our kids and how do we do that the best? People in Wyoming need to have a conversation about what education means to our kids, what it means to our communities, what it means to our families, and how we can adequately support it. I think everybody is kind of dancing around that issue. And there is a cost. There's just no question to that. And that's not a question we should duck. It is a question we should just actually sit down and have a robust conversation about.
And we'll be looking forward to visiting with you again. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Greg.
For joining us on Capital Outlook.
Wonderful to be here.
We're going to continue our discussions on a lot of things that have happened in the last week with the leadership of the legislature, Senate President Drew Perkins and House Speaker Steve Harshman. That's next. And we continue on now with the leadership of the Wyoming legislature, the president of the Senate, Drew Perkins, and Speaker of the House, Steve Harshman. Gentlemen, welcome. A lot has changed since we visited a week ago. And I think as I just talked with the governor about it, I think a lot of people in Wyoming are wondering if Wyoming is on a little more shaky ground relative to its fiscal foundation today than it was a week ago. And what have you been thinking in the last week? Mr. President, let me start with you.
I've been thinking what everybody's been thinking is a protracted price war on oil, where you have, as both affected, oil and natural gas, coal struggling. So it affects the major revenue streams of the state of Wyoming. So that creates a new set of challenges.
The issue is none of us can predict the future. So you don't know if this, you know, when Saudi Arabia was bombed a few months back, 20 years ago, that had been a bigger deal than it was. And within 10 days, everything was back to normal. So how this coronavirus all works out, how this, you know, the price war, you know, all our projections are based on year-long averages. And so this fiscal year will end in July, July 1st. You know, we had Wyoming crude was well above our projected 50 for many months, you know, a year ago, starting in the summer. And so I think, you know, that's the thing I keep telling myself. It's not a one-day deal. It's a yearly average. And we're positioned well as far as reserves, those kind of things. It's not going to go to zero, but it's going to be a challenge. You know, coal, you know, we're down a third of our production, and it's tough.
Just remember, when we had a financial collapse in, you know, just a few years ago, 5 years ago, we had a major financial collapse with financial markets. It looked, all these things were going around, and you know, we came out of that. There's no reason to believe that this will be any different. So I think really there's some short-term issues about resolving anything from potential maybe a little bit of crunch on cash flow to resolving a few issues that are caused by these downturns. But But the other side is continue, what do we do for the future? Again, it continues to be about trying to, I think, find efficiencies, make sure government does what it's supposed to do, continue to define the scope of government, and then continue to look at ways that we diversify our economy as well as our tax base.
I want to come back to the scope of government question in just a minute, but Mr. Speaker, I want you to give you the opportunity.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I think, first of all, I think in the last 4 years, first of all, we're the first legislative group to start televising interim meeting broadcasts. So we're going to continue and appreciate your help in that effort. That's only going to increase. And I think we're eventually going to have a system here in the Capitol where people can actually participate in interim meetings and not be here, and do that through video conferencing. And so all those participation, transparency things are really important in a state like ours. But you named them. I mean, the key issues are going to be the same. We're going to talk about water. We're going to talk about revenues. We're going to talk about our investments on capital finance and how we continue our investment policies and all those things. Transportation, our roads are, that's going to be a big topic again, and I-80 and to try to solve some of those problems and keep moving forward. But these issues never go away. So, yeah, the work I'm interested in are really all these things and just keep moving the state forward.
The governor said something earlier in the interview today that I want your comment on, and it leads to scope of government, and I want to understand your roles as the leadership of the legislature. He said that it's time that we start thinking about what are the programs we can do without. He said, how can we reduce the footprint of government? He thinks that's going to be the critical issue now. Is it time to figure out what programs we can do without, and what is your role as leadership?
Actually, I'm delighted to hear the governor say that. If the taxpayers of Wyoming, as residents of Wyoming, are going to have some choices to make. And if it is that government live within the taxes that it currently has and revenue it currently has and as is allotted, then we have to take a very careful look at the services that we have. You can't continue to provide the same services with a smaller amount of revenue or a limbo. And so those things have, and I'm delighted. I've been talking about this for years, and the legislature has a few blunt instruments in which it can deal and actually limit the scope of government. The only person with a scalpel is the executive branch, and the governor heads the executive branch. They're the only ones that can go out and have a scalpel and have the both the manpower and the resources to examine those programs and figure out which ones are unprioritized and determine which ones are important for the state of Wyoming. And then as that moves forward, as he makes those proposals to the legislature, then it's our job to represent and to take that input from our residents and then to represent our constituents in determining whether we agree with those or not agree with those or have other suggestions.
And it's commonly said, and it's hard to do. And the bottom line is about half the budget's in the Department of Health. And I tell you, we've shut down a few of those programs, and it's tough. And so the biggest state-funded, generally funded dollars is mental health. And we kind of go that alone. We've chosen not to expand Medicaid, which could maybe carve out some of those dollars, but you got the providers. Not all of them want to do that, right? Because we've set up a state system. That's $50 million. And good luck to the governor or any legislators think they can cut that. You just won't have the votes to do it, I think. And unless there's a groundswell of people say, hey, mental health, we don't want these services anymore across the state. that was kind of rolled out in 2006-07. And so you got to look at these big, we can take a little program here, a couple million dollars, but the real money is the Department of Health, Department of Family Services, University of Wyoming, community colleges.
Department of Corrections.
But, that's the biggest growth of government we've had in 20 years. We opened a new prison, 220 employees. And so they're tough choices. And I think, I'm all for that discussion. I'm just saying it's easy to say that. It's easy for us to say, we can go ahead and cut mental health. Good luck.
We have about a minute left. What's the legacy of the 65th? Mr. Speaker?
I think we've moved the ball in the right direction, I think, and just the conversations and the education piece about revenue and the challenges. I think the 64th and the 65th, we faced the greatest fiscal downturn in the state's history. You know, the Great Depression, we didn't even tax anything in those days. There was no money. There were no federal programs, really. But how we weathered that whole storm, and really now we're seeing our population is starting to increase again. We've got 4,000 more school kids than we had just a few years ago, and we had this exodus from the state. And so you're starting to see all that kind of turn around. Those are all good numbers. We're seeing more young people come into the state. And so I think to weather that downturn like that, I think most folks didn't really even know it. I mean, from a government service level, was there some, absolutely, some job losses, and those things are very painful. But I think the way we've built our reserves and the way we've used those things, and I think the planning piece has been really helpful. And it's given us some time to have these conversations and to not go around and in the crisis mode, I think has been really important. I mentioned the transparency part. The budget process, we got the budget out sooner. It's more, everything's seen online. All that stuff, every meeting is broadcast online. So if folks want to know it all, they can know it all. They can listen in on every meeting. And, you know, that never happened 10 years ago. So all those things, I think, are movements in the right direction.
What's your reflection on the legacy of this legislature and specifically the Senate?
I think that you've seen many of the things that the speaker talked about. I think right at the top of that list is transparency and civic involvement. You have, just in the last 3 years, you have gone to where you can find almost every document that is submitted to the legislature, to any legislative committee to look at. You can find that online. You can find the agendas online. We have we're live streaming committee meetings even during the interim. We're live streaming during the interim. We've moved and we have in the current budget bill for the legislature additional money to further enhance, now that we're back in the Capitol, to live stream every one of these to live stream every committee meeting that happens in these Capitol hearing rooms. So the transparency has been phenomenal. If you look at how we've weathered the downturn in 15-16, not even a downturn, it was a financial meltdown, a national and international financial meltdown, how we weathered that and how we continue to move for the future. If you go and look, when we started all this, the LSRA was at $1.7 billion. So we finish up this, going through some pretty tough years for Wyoming, it's almost $1.4 billion. We've improved systems. We've set things in place to continue to be able to develop and pay for government as we move forward, and pay for the services that citizens get, and at the same time continue to look for efficiencies. We've done efficiency studies. We've done all of these things that make government better, more responsive, and more transparent, and set us up well to move into the future.
Well, I thank you both. Again, I've said it before, Wyoming's legislative folks who serve in the Senate and the House are available, willing to visit, and I appreciate that. I appreciate your time that you give us each week, and I know our viewers do as well. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you, Craig.
Well, thank you. And I think, you know, one last thing, too, and I think your work is so important. A lot of people watch what you're doing, and you've done it so well. I think the other thing that the President and I are very pleased with, I think our, you know, part of this thing is you try to leave it better than you found it. And I think the decorum and the process, the legislative process, that bicameralism is tough. It's a tough, and our founders set it up that way. But in the end, the process really works. And I think we're going to pass that on to the people that come behind us. This whole method and process and decorum, the whole thing. And so I think sometimes folks from the outside see it, but when you come down, the respect for each other and the process, I think, is so important. And I know the President's done a great job of that, and feel really good about that as we pass this on.
Well, best wishes to you both.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
We move on. We're going to talk about revenue with the chairs of the Senate and House Revenue Committee. That's Representative Dan Zwanitzer and Chairman Cale Case. Stay with us. And as we continue on with our final week of Capitol Outlook, we are revisiting revenue in Wyoming with the two chairmen of the Joint Revenue Committees, the House Revenue Committee Chairman Representative Dan Zwanitzer and Senator Cale Case. Welcome back to Capitol Outlook.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Do you feel now, with dropping oil prices, with impacts of sales tax, that now all of a sudden your work is going to be more important in this interim?
Sure. Well, and so we've known we've had some budgetary problems now for 5 years, and we continue to drain funds. And I think our work's been important now for 3 years on the Revenue Committee. But increasingly, especially with the drop price in oil over the past week, it's almost certain we are going to have to take some serious measures in the next, throughout the interim in the next session to stabilize our budget. So, yeah, now more than ever, I think people will be watching the Revenue Committee and seeing what type of creative and standard issues we can bring forward, right? We continue to bring the property tax, the sales tax, a host of different options in taxation. I hope this interim will look at other ways to do fund transfers, do kind of a larger, systematic, holistic budget picture, and figure out how how we set ourselves up to cushion the fall. And hopefully, as some of the projections look in 5 years, oil may come back at a stronger level. And we're just trying to really get 5 years in to see if we can hit that curve back up again. So that's my hope for the interim.
Things are much more dire today, it seems to me, than they were at the start of the session, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I think we have an acute situation on top of a previously serious structural problem. I mean, for my co-chairman and I, it's been like watching the tide come in, how unstoppable it is, and saying that we really need to start doing things. I think we basically deceived the people of Wyoming by continuing to have business as usual in Cheyenne for the last 3 sessions, and especially now to leave, really have significantly drained our reserves. This is what we call the golden rod here, and every fund balance is significantly down. There is just, we're bottoming them out, and we're bottoming out pretty fast. Our revenue projections, the last revenue projections on the table are from January, and they're long-term, but they were the most optimistic projections of all sources, and so they were optimistic in January. They haven't been retuned to reflect the current events in the world and the oil markets. But remember, we look long term. Mm-hmm. We're trying to look multiple years out. It is absolutely true. We have a cash crunch like crazy now with low oil prices, and it'll affect us easily for the next year probably. But it doesn't mean it's going to be a long term situation. We are going to get through this as a country and as a state.
What would you tell Wyomingites who are watching right now, who have really thought that new revenue options aren't that important maybe until now? What would you say to them?
I would say we continue to have this mindset that we can keep cutting government and the realization that we have cut government significantly. 26% of the entire general fund in the past 4 years. And there's really just not that anywhere left to cut. And so this, we can't raise taxes until we've cut government as much as possible. I think we've done a good job in Wyoming about the public hasn't felt those cuts that we've done because we've been draining reserve accounts and making it feel like everyday life hasn't changed in Wyoming. But behind the scenes, we've lost almost $1.5 billion and drained our reserves. And so we're not too many years away from a significant, difficult taxation increase, government cut to education by 10 or 20%, we're just not on a sustainable path. And so we've been beating that drum for a while now that we can't continue like this, but somewhere the public has to respond and say, we need to encourage our legislators to find the right solution that keeps Wyoming viable in the future. And we're still trying to find that solution.
And Mr. Chairman, we were told at the start of the session that we have time, we can look. Do you feel that way today?
And we're running out of time. We've actually done a disservice as a legislature because we've covered up the problems by having such great wealth and immediately available reserves. We've been able to, as my co-chairman said, kind of maintain a facade of business as usual from Cheyenne. Well, it's going to be pretty hard to hold that together. And I talk to people in coffee shops all around Wyoming, and they're talking about it. And it's easy to fire off an email that says you need to cut government before you raise anybody's taxes. Well, honestly, the education deficit alone is astounding. And it's time that we maybe start thinking out of the box. I keep saying, well, maybe school choice. It's time for alternatives in education and really change the way we do some things in state government. But even then, we need revenue measures. So people in Wyoming need to decide what taxes they want, because we really do have to have more taxes.
You were told yesterday by the in your Senate Revenue Committee by Dan Noble, who is the director of the Department of Revenue, that really you have two tools at your disposal, property tax or sales tax, and that income tax in Wyoming constitutionally and for other reasons really isn't viable for you to consider. Do you agree with that? And if so, then?
I don't agree totally. It's true that the big workhorses are the property tax and the sales tax, and we can tweak them. We haven't even begun to tweak the property tax. So we pay very low property taxes in Wyoming, and I know that doesn't seem like it when you're writing that check, but the truth is, compared to other states, we really, really do. And so there's a lot of emphasis there. With regard to sales taxes, rather than raising the rates, we probably are going to seriously look at extending it to other services. We probably have to. And those two taxes are very powerful. But I sort of disagreed with Mr. Noble's characterization that the income tax is corporate income tax. I'm only talking about a corporate income tax, is not worth pursuing, because I look at the property and sales taxes paid by large retailers with headquarters in other states. I mean, I'm talking about, big corporations. And I think that's an area we really need to put some taxes on, because I don't feel they contribute enough to our community. And the property taxes and the sales taxes they pay are very de minimis.
Very, very small. Mr. Chairman?
Oh, I think it's going to be an across the board. Certainly a property tax or a sales tax are an immediate measure for a substantial amount of revenue. But those are also maybe the most difficult shifts for the population as a whole to stomach. So in the House, we've been working on, small increases across the board, some fees, some taxes, and trying to, we have a corporate income tax bill that didn't even get introduced this year after we spent a significant amount of work in the interim. If we knew 5 weeks ago that we were going to be where we are now, that would have been introduced and we would have had a more serious conversation. Our fuel tax increase of 3 cents didn't make the introduction threshold. I think four weeks ago we knew where we'd be right now with oil $20 a barrel less than projected, which is $120 million more, less technically than the Craig says. Yeah, we would have probably taken a couple more serious steps 4 weeks ago if we really knew what would be happening today with oil prices over the weekend. But moving forward, it's going to be an all-of-the-above strategy. We're going to have more government cuts, and we're going to really look at kind of which smaller-level fees and taxes to increase, because I don't think the answer is just we're going to add a 2-cent sales tax and call it good. That's really not responsible for the people of Wyoming. If we're going to do that, we need to make sure we've looked at all options and all fees. But sales and property are the two big dogs.
I think that people in Wyoming may want to hear your answers to this question. Are you really leaving Cheyenne with a balanced budget?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
No. We both agree. No. Right. It's papered over. And we're doing it by taking things that are savings, accessible savings, and using it to balance the budget. So we've been kind of putting money away and diverting funds into different places. But no, revenues are way under the cost of government.
And not what you use to project this budget.
No, it's not a sustainable budget. I voted no on the budget. I would go back to square one on the budget if we could, but we don't have that option.
What are your thoughts, Mr. Chairman?
We're doing a whole lot of transfers behind the scenes to make it look on paper that we're surviving, but you can't do that very long without any new sources of income, right? So we're just really shifting fund balances around and transferring money that previously was being spent or utilized in one place, but we're draining accounts across the board behind the scenes, and eventually we're going to have 1 year where we have a massive hit to the LSRA, and it's going to show up on paper, and people will wonder, how did this happen in one, and it could be in this next year. If oil prices stay at the $30 to $32 a barrel for much longer, you'll see the April Craig report have a drastically different forecast and revenue picture than what we started out with in January. I mean, in 4 months, you remember 4 years ago, it was about a four-month period, we lost $1 billion in 2015. We're on track, if oil prices don't jump back up pretty quickly here, to have another one of those perfect storms. And when you add the coronavirus, and our tourism is our number two industry, is going to take a pretty big hit this year in our sales tax revenue and our visitation. we're going to hit another perfect storm of not only mineral prices, but tourism both being hit at the same time, and that's not sustainable to our budget.
So the question becomes then, after all of the cuts that Governor Meade made, what's left to cut? Now revenue. And I think that all committees do important work in the interim. Certainly Education Committee will this interim, but so will yours. And I think our viewers need to really pay attention to what it is that you are working on and where you're going with your work in the Revenue Committee. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on Capital Outlook.
Thank you very much.
And we continue on with Capital Outlook with two long-term Wyoming lawmakers, Senator Hank Coe and Senator Eli Bebout. That's next. Stay with us. And as we continue on with our fifth week of Capital Outlook, it's my great pleasure to be joined by two veterans of the Wyoming legislature, Senator Eli Bebout and Senator Hank Coe. To you both, welcome. We're going to talk about your history together here in just a minute that dates back to the 60s, and certainly your service here in the legislature to the 80s. But I want to catch up with both of you about recent events in the last week that we've talked about earlier in the show with the governor and the leadership about falling oil prices, plunging oil prices, tanking stock markets. Senator, you said, had we learned this maybe 6 weeks ago, that the budget that the Joint Appropriations Committee kicked out might have looked a lot different. You still feel that way?
Well, good morning. It's great to be here with you, and thank you. Yes, I think it would have been different, you know, and I've said early on, I still believe the cup is half full. You know, it's not total doom and gloom, but what a wake-up call. You know, you think we're still so dependent on minerals, and that this recent crash in the price of crude oil just shows us the dependence we have and our inability to either have reduced spending responsibly or to look at revenue generation. So I think the budget would have been differently. I really do. And you look at that number, I think for every dollar per barrel or dollar price per barrel, it affects the state to the tune of $12.5 million. So $10 a barrel we've lost, $125 million, it's real money. So yeah, it would have made a big difference.
Senator, you're about to embark on this recalibration effort. Is markets plunging and oil prices falling, does that at all impact the way that this process of school recalibration and how schools will be funded in the future? Are there any synergy there at all, or does it matter to schools?
Well, I think there's some synergy in the back of the minds of those that will be out there making decisions. Hopefully, if recalibration even proceeds, I'm not even quite sure how it's going to be handled because I'm not sure where House Bill 40 is, but, you know, have a look at the basket. And there's some opportunity there, I think, if we analyze the basket and look at it, to maybe modernize is the catchword out there. Maybe take some of the components out. Those different components in the basket cost money, and so there's some hope there. But all in all, recalibration's about coming up with the current cost basis for the 36 components.
You both have together over 60 years of service here in the Wyoming legislature, and you both potentially could stand for re-election this fall. Have you made any decisions about your political future, Senator Bebout?
Great question, and it keeps me awake at night. And I have, you know, after 28 years, and thank goodness for the opportunity to serve the wonderful people of Fremont County, where, you know, you and I got to know each other years ago, and work for them and help them and take care of their issues. I'm not going to run for re-election. I've given a lot of thought, and you know, my grandpa always taught me never leave a job unless you finish it. And we haven't finished a lot of the things that I wanted to do and accomplish, but that's politics. So, you know, I'm going to move on with my life and thank the voters and the people of Fremont County for the opportunity to serve. It's been a great run. There's so many things we've done, so many things Senator Coe and I worked on together that are just legislation that we could talk an hour about the things we worked on together. So I'm going to step aside and let the new generation, if you will, come in and take off and run with it. I wish I could have left them a little bit better position in terms of our budgets and the way we spend money, but it is what it is.
And this job, I would argue, isn't finished. It just never ends.
I would agree with that.
Senator Coe, what have you thought about relative to your political future?
You know, it's interesting. You know, it's been my distinct pleasure to represent the people of Park County. When I first ran, we ran countywide before we had single member districts. Those were created in 1992, and I've had some tough elections. I've you know, up and down type elections, and this is my 32nd year. For example, when Eli was Speaker of the House in 99 and 2000, I was majority floor leader in the Senate. We had quite a rapport in leadership, actually, back then. Jim Twyford was president of the Senate, but I pretty much, I have decided not to run again. 32 years is a long time. I've got seven grandkids, age 14 on up to 22. Want to spend some more time with my family. I want to spend some more time playing golf with this guy in Arizona. We do that occasionally. And it's time for somebody else to step in. And we've got some good new people that'll step up, hopefully, and we'll bring new ideas and new thoughts. And like Eli says, though, I hate to leave him where we are right now, but that's just the nature of the beast. And
Hank and I, you know, we talked about the relationship between the Senate and the House. It was a good relationship, and, you know, we had our differences, but we seemed to work them out. A little different than the animosity that's occurred lately, and it's too bad, because at the end of the day, you know, you really want to do what's right for Wyoming, so there's a little difference here. But going back to how I started out, my mother organized a write-in candidate for me as a write-in. I think I started with 7 votes. Who'd have thought 28 years later we'd be having this conversation? It's a wonderful thing called America. It's even greater when you live in Wyoming.
You two met at UW, didn't you, in the 60s? You're friends. And you're best friends.
We're best friends.
Absolutely.
Tell me, how did you meet in college?
I'll let Senator Coe talk about that. Yeah, we just know each other by name and reputation to start with, which is Wyoming. You know, all of us know other people in other communities because we've heard that name. And, of course, Coe name is synonymous. You know, his mother was an icon in Park County, and so I always knew the name as a young man. And finally, I met this guy named Hank Coe. It just kind of took off from there, and we've just been great friends ever since.
Well, I always affectionately refer to Eli as the greatest little dribbler to ever come out of Shoshone.
And former basketball player.
But he played a lot of basketball up in the Bighorn Basin, so I knew of him. You know, we kind of raised our kids and pretty much our kids the same age. I think my kids might be a little older, but gosh, it's just, you know, we just have a great relationship. And
I mean, this is a huge change for you both, because if people don't understand that this is a year-long job, they should. And you're at this all the time. Mm-hmm. And you're retiring, in a sense, from the legislature, even though it's a citizen legislature.
Well, and it's changed a lot, too. I mean, with the internet and the emails and the different things, it's changed considerably, and that's just part of it. And so it just takes more and more of your time, which is a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, there's a lot of issues. You need to dedicate the time to it. But, you know, as a citizen, you still have your life. You still have to make a living. You still have to raise your family. And so, and thank goodness for a citizen legislature. Let's never change that. But it's becoming more and more time consuming. And I don't know, Hank, how you feel about that, but I don't see it changing. I think it's going to become more and more time consuming. You'll have fewer and fewer business people who you want there running.
I figure I spend pretty close to 50% of my time doing it. In the interims, I go to a lot of meetings, education meetings. We have a lot of meetings. Don't spend the time that this guy's been spending on appropriations, because he comes down here in December for 2 weeks and 2 more weeks in January, and then comes to the session. The Appropriations Committee is the real time consumer to serve on that. And kudos to my good friend here who has provided leadership and you know, difficult times that we need, you know, with the $200 million a year shortfall in K-12 and a lot more problems down the road.
Yeah. So, you know, certainly new eyes and new vision is good, but there's some institutional knowledge across the table for me here that will be hard to replace, I feel.
I think that's this, you know, in anything in life, when you dedicate your life to a particular career, business, politics like Hank and I have, that you will have that institutional memory. And yes, it's going to be missed, but it will be created again by those that come in. When we first elected, we lost people who had that institutional knowledge. And certainly in my case, Senator Peck, my goodness, not only of the Senate, but of Wyoming or Fremont County. So yes, there will be a void there, no question about it. But that's the great thing about Wyoming. You know, there's people out there willing to serve, and there'll be good people following us. And I have every bit of confidence in that will happen.
Just for example, Craig, my grandfather served in the Wyoming House in 1947. Eli's uncle Mike Sweeler was here for how many years, Eli, back in the 60s and 70s?
The House and the Senate. Ran for the U.S. Senate and lost in a primary, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's rewarding. It's been very rewarding. But, you know, institutional memory, And I can say this because he's a good friend. I don't think he'd be offended. Somebody asked me last year at the legislature when we left, he said, what do you think it'd be like in 50 years here? And I said, well, I think Charlie Scott will still be here. But, and I love Charlie. And I my whole time, you know, he's been here 42 years. Quite a guy. I don't know if he's running again. I haven't talked to him. So,
well, who wins the golf match here?
Well, he's, you know, he's got the pencil too. That's what's always bad. You know, he not only is a better golfer than me, he controls the pencil.
That's an important part of this.
I learned that being chairman of Appropriations Committee. You know, he who has the pencil or the budget kind of has something to do about it. But no, it's as you look forward and you think about it, if you're crazy enough to be elected into politics, what a great place to do it called Wyoming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you can still remain a citizen. And I've been lobbied in a steam room. I've been lobbied in the grocery store, in the post office. I mean, that's Wyoming. And I don't think it'll ever change. I hope it doesn't. And so it's different than a lot of states.
And you both have some work to do in the interim for sure.
Absolutely. We're not done. I mean, stick around. Stay tuned. You know, we're going to be here until the end of the year. And there's a lot of challenges out there. Looking forward to working. Senator Coe has provided so much leadership. In education, I mean, he is a guru for education, and boy, that's going to be missed. Yep. Nobody knows education like Hank Coe and the job he's done, and I hope people, I know they respect him and appreciate what he's done, but boy, he will be missed.
Well, I'll miss both of you as well, in all honesty. I've known you both for a very long time, Senator from the racquetball courts back in the day, and certainly Eli from our time together in in Riverton, and I wish you both just the best of luck.
And same to you.
Well, same to you, Craig. You know, we've had the pleasure of working with you, and you've been wonderful to work with, and, you know, we've become friends. And so we wish you all the best in the future as well.
And
thank you
so
much.
I shake your hand, but everybody's nervous about shaking hands.
No,
but I'm
not.
I'm going to do it.
I'm not.
Thank you
so
much for what you've done for our state and the way you've handled yourself and the good job you do for Wyoming Public Television.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And best wishes to you both. All right, we'll continue on now with our final Capitol Outlook profile of the season. We'll meet Senator Afialis. That's next. Stay with us. And we're pleased now to be joined on this Capitol Outlook profile with Senator Afialis in Cheyenne. Senator, welcome. We appreciate your
Thank
time
you.
Here today. And what a beautiful home. Thanks for hosting us.
You bet. Welcome.
You've served in the Wyoming legislature since 2017. You were the first Native American woman to serve in the Senate. Abby, why did you want to run?
I think I've always been interested in politics and being involved. I'd spent some time working for former U.S. Senator Craig Thomas and really appreciated the opportunity to work on policy. And I was very content to be a person working for someone else who was in that spotlight. But a kind of well-worn story that I've told folks is my kids really inspired me to run. And looking at the composition of the Wyoming legislature in 2016, realized that we definitely needed more women serving. At the time, there was only one woman serving in the Senate. So after a lot of thought, decided that I would transition from being kind of a behind-the-scenes person to actually being the candidate.
You've talked a lot, too, about the, I think struggle's the right word, of being a mother to young children and also being a legislator. And what that means to serve and to serve well and to be really involved. How do you manage?
You know, I think there's a lot of things that people do in our day, and it really caused me to kind of examine how I spend my time. And so, you know, I will tell you I watch a lot less TV, which is fine. But it's really kind of your perspective, too. If you want to look at it as, this is horrible work and I have to do it, then that's kind of your that's how you're going to look at what you're doing. And I really make a conscious effort to feel lucky and fortunate to do all the work that I get to. And so I think that positive energy really, sets the tone with my family. And I know they're proud of me and they're proud to support my work. And I'm just lucky that I have them in my lives.
Let's rewind the timeline a little bit. You grew up in Jackson.
I did.
Learned to swim in, Astoria Hot Springs? Is that a true story?
Yeah.
Tell me about your childhood.
So I grew up in Jackson, and my family story is actually really interesting. Both of my parents are Navajo. They grew up on the Navajo Reservation. Back in the 1950s, there was a big effort to get Native kids a trade education, so their family sent them to a boarding school in Brigham City, Utah, and it was called the Intermountain Indian School. And at the time, our country, we were just coming out of World War II. We needed more welders, and so my dad came from a Navajo silversmithing family, And so he learned how to weld. And my mom learned general home economic studies. And so she learned how to work in a laundry and clean motel rooms, those kind of jobs. And my dad fortunately got a job in Jackson back in the 50s when it was still very much a rowdy cow town. He sent for my mom and they started planting roots there, and they were there since the mid-1950s. You know, back then, my dad owned his own welding shop eventually, but my family, you know, we worked a lot of different jobs. My brother had a small engine company that he did with my dad in their welding shop. My sisters have held a number of jobs, and then I currently have a sister-in-law who has a copy shop called Copy Works.
What was Appiellis like in high school?
I was a very serious high school student. I think I didn't know what opportunities were out there. And so,
did you know you wanted to be a lawyer then?
A little bit. And oddly enough, because of television shows, I think you watch shows like LA Law and, you know, those kind of programs. And I would spend a lot of weekends cleaning rooms with my mom. And I just wondered, you know, what's a way out of this? I don't want to spend my life working a minimum wage job. And it seemed like all those characters on TV didn't have to do that. So I figured college was probably necessary, and then maybe I want to be a lawyer, even though I had no idea what that meant at that time.
And you went to UW?
I did.
What was your undergraduate work in?
Yeah, I started off with a variety of majors like most students, but I ended up doing political science. And at the time, they had an American Indian Studies minor. Now you can major in it. Took a lot of Spanish as well, but those were my two focus areas, were poli-sci and American Indian Studies.
And you ended up at CU Law School.
I did.
Yeah, how did that come about?
Yeah, after graduating from the University of Wyoming, I got a job working for Craig Thomas in Washington, D.C. So we moved out there and really enjoyed my time in Washington, loved the work, but knew I wanted to be back west. So I applied to a few different law schools, the University of Wyoming, University of Colorado, and for whatever reason, CU just seemed to make the most sense for me and my family, and that's where I ended up.
You serve as chairman of the Joint Committee on Tribal Relations along with Representative Larson, and you're a member of the Navajo Nation. What are the grand challenges in your mind with your background that the state has to work on in the near future relative to its relationship with both the Eastern Shoshone and the Northern Arapaho tribe?
Growing up as a native person in Wyoming, you know, obviously I was in Jackson. I think there wasn't always an understanding or an awareness of what that meant to be a Navajo person or a Native American person. And so, you know, throughout my life, it's been not only understanding the cultural piece of what that means, but also understanding the legal history of why we're unique. And so even recently I had a colleague ask me about the citizenship status of Native people. And I try and equate it to, you know, the fact that we're all members and citizens of Wyoming, and we're also citizens of the United States. We have this dual citizenship. So if you're a tribal member, it's just another level of citizenship. And to understand that completely and thoroughly, I mean, we're really talking about understanding history that goes back to contact era of, you know, Spanish conquistadors. And so I really think it's important for people to have that understanding so that they can understand why we are where we are today with how reservations operate and why there are some of those unique challenges that make living on those reservations sometimes difficult.
You spent a lot of your time on the Senate Education Committee. I still serve on the committee today. And you said this at one time about education, that the purpose was to strike a balance between providing quality, equitable education in Wyoming to Wyoming's children and not doing harm to the Wyoming economy when government revenues are down. You've given this a lot of thought. Will Wyoming be able to continue to build its schools? Will Wyoming continue to be able to fund education?
Yes. The answer to both of those is yes. You know, I think we've been very proud and blessed for the fact that Wyoming for the past couple of decades has outpaced and outspent our neighboring states. And, you know, the latest revenue dollars we use are $16,000 per student in Wyoming compared to our neighboring states, which range between $6,000 and on the high end, $11,000, which was North Dakota, $11,000 per student. And so, you know, in those years where we had flush revenue derived from our mineral industry, I don't think people were so concerned about how efficient those dollars were being spent. And certainly as a member of the legislature now, I think we need to be looking for efficiencies. And I think there's a lot of easy, though, miscommunication about our intentions. But I always want to remind folks, my children are the most important thing in my life. I have three kids who are in grade 6, 4, and first grade. So I'm in this for the long haul. And I don't want to do anything that's going to hurt, I think, things that are really effective, and that's having quality teachers. We need to be paying our teachers well. But are there room for efficiencies? Absolutely. And we need to find those. And the difficult balance is the legislature doesn't have the tool of a scalpel to go in there and look for those efficiencies. We just have the hammer or the sword. You know, we just control a big budget, but those spending decisions are done at the local district level. So I've done a lot of work in the last few years to really meet our school board members, our administrative leaders, look at Cheyenne's budget and try and understand that. So I have kind of both sides of the picture.
I see over on Credenta, just out of the picture here, a little statue of a trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar trailer to the one I think that you have.
It is.
You like to camp? Is that one of the family things that you like to do?
I do. I very much like being outdoors. And I think since being elected to the Senate and serving in the legislature, it's a great way to see the state of Wyoming. We travel a lot for the legislature. So I think one of the things that actually brings me a lot of joy is hitching up my trailer to my car and hitting the road. And
what year is the trailer? I've seen pictures of it. Yeah, it's not new.
It's not new. It's a 1963 Shasta, and I've named her Emma. And over the years, I've been renovating her. And so it's been a fun project for me and for my family. And I know a lot of families have big RVs and trailers, but I very much like packing my family of five and a dog into this tiny 18-foot trailer. And we're just having great adventures and making great memories.
So I give you one place to go in Wyoming with your family in the trailer.
Okay.
Where are you going?
I will have to give this some thought. I think we've had some of our best times in Wyoming state parks. Gowdy, Guernsey, and Glendoe tend to be our favorites. And I think it's because of the location. We did stay in some of the yurts at Guernsey. And those are special little places. And there are a lot of great places off the beaten path in Wyoming, so I highly recommend that. I also love camping in Sinks Canyon.
I got to meet your dog earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Your dog gets around very well on three legs.
Yes.
How did that come about? It must have been really tragic and a tough event for you.
Yeah, we have a dog named Tennessee. We call her Tenny for short, and I think I just heard her collar jingle. Her ears probably perked up. But we have voted as a family on whether or not to get a dog, and I was the only no vote. But after she came into our lives, our kids were taking her for a walk, and unfortunately, she got free and got hit by a truck. And so she survived. Our great neighbors just down the street were able to get her to the vet and saved her life. And so, you know, it was an awful day, probably one of the worst days I've had in a long, long time.
You've started the process of learning the Navajo language.
I have.
How's that going?
It's a slow process. Both my parents grew up in fluent homes of Navajo, and unfortunately, their boarding experience, they didn't speak hardly any of it. When they, you know, left that school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really a forced issue for those people that are unfamiliar with Native American boarding schools. They were punished severely for speaking their native languages. So growing up, it wasn't something that my parents emphasized for us to know. However, my mom recently passed, and she, you know, in her last month of life or so, started speaking more in the language. It was coming back to her. And listening to her, you know, sing some songs and use that language again really just filled my heart with a need to try and figure out a way to reconnect with that language. And it's not an easy one. For anyone who's familiar with Navajo, it was a language used during World War II to...
Code talkers comes to mind, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the Navajo code talkers were, they used their language to communicate and evade other people from understanding what the United States government was communicating within its armed forces. So... I think it's an incredible language and something I'd like to figure out, but it's just a matter of finding the time to do it.
Well, Senator Ellis, it's always been a pleasure to visit with you, and thank you for hosting us in your beautiful
Thanks
home.
For coming.
This program is supported in part by a grant from the BNSF Railway Foundation, dedicated to improving the general welfare and quality of life in communities throughout the BNSF Railway Service Area. Proud to support Wyoming PBS.
By a grant from AARP, serving the needs and providing real possibilities for the over 50 population in Wyoming. AARP Wyoming. Proud to support Wyoming PBS.
And by Wyoming Humanities, celebrating our heritage, strengthening our democracy, and growing Wyoming's creative and cultural economy for over 50 years. Visit thinkwy.org.